Hips to Heels, How to Preserve the Health of Your Legs. The lowly legs, often forgotten about until misuse or disuse leads to some problem. Some of these problems are fairly common, from joint disease to varicose veins to bunions. But why wait until the damage is done? Are there steps we can take to preserve the health of our hips, knees, ankles, and feet, and the circulatory system that serves all of them? What's the right way to walk? And what's the risk, if any, of barefoot running? I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll talk with three experts who will offer guidance on these questions. Dr. Brian McGorry is with Maine Medical Partners Orthopedics, Division of Joint Replacements. Dr. Cindy Asbjornson, founder of the Vein Healthcare Center in South Portland. And Dr. Kenny Mazick of Portland Foot and Ankle. The latest on preserving, promoting, and treating your legs, from hips to heels. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by the Maine Community Foundation, working with donors and other partners to strengthen Maine's economy and communities, on the web at mainecf.org, and by Roosevelt Campobello International Park, featuring Tea with Eleanor, twice daily, limited seating, information at fdr.net.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Maybe it's because of where the legs are on the body that they are so poorly treated, down there next to the ground. We neglect them as lowly servants who are expected to quietly schlep us around and sport our uncomfortable but fashionable footwear, and we curse them when they complain or cause trouble. But some would argue that legs are more than just some set of wheels. They are the foundation for our entire body, a second heart even. Today we'll explore three major areas of leg health. We'll talk about hips, veins, and feet. And we want to hear from you. If you have questions or comments about leg health, email talk@mpbn.net. Follow us on Facebook, tweet at Maine Calling, or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. Let's start at the top of the hips to heels chain with Dr. Brian McGorry. First of all, you're a hip guy, I guess we could say.
Yes.
Hip disease is pretty common, I'm guessing, and I'm guessing it's maybe age-related, but tell us how common it is, that is, joint problems in hips.
Well, it's a very common issue in the Western world where we complain about it and talk about it, and it interferes with our lives. I think we still are incomplete understanding of why we have hip and knee disease, lower extremity arthritis, but there are many causes and a lot of research being done on it. So I would say it's one of the most common maladies. For example, Medicare, one of their highest expenses is for the treatment of hip and knee arthritis.
So you say in the Western world, is it not seen worldwide?
Well, we just don't know. A lot of the patients that we see that present to our offices with hip and knee complaints have issues that seem to be related to our expectations as patients and as Americans. So there is a cultural interpretation of what to do with pain and stiffness and disability that relates to hip and knee arthritis and muscular pain. So I say that only because the context is important when we talk about, A, you know, what constitutes something worth treating, and B, you know, what the prevalence is.
So do we have a tendency as a society, as a culture, to, when we feel a pain, to stay off it and start to feel old and act old? Is that what you're – am I getting that?
It's actually the opposite. Okay. That I was going for there. I think you know, there's a number of different expectations that we have as Americans. And one of them that I've noticed over the last two decades of practice is that patients try to be more active and have very high expectations, even into their 70s and 80s, as far as staying independent and staying active. Now, that's not all of our population, but that's a big vocal part of our population. And we're told from national groups like the CDC to expect to be able to exercise five times a week, getting your heart rate up, you know, in a high range, over 100 beats per minute. And in order to do those types of things and to stay healthy and live a healthful lifestyle, patients need a good foundation. And that, you know, is impeded, of course, if there's pain and stiffness from arthritis.
And it can be a complicated puzzle. It's not always just a joint. It could be something else that's contributing, a compensation, for example, hurting one hip or another.
Absolutely. When we talk about the hip, many patients think of movie stars' hips. They don't think of the hip joint, which is really not necessarily in the bottom where the spine meets the leg, but actually in the groin area. That's where the hip joint itself is. And there's a number of very strong muscles. The strongest muscle in the body, the gluteus maximus, attaches around the hip. And it's really a watershed area of the spine and the hip joint. So a lot of times, discomfort around the hip region could be from the hip joint. It could be from the muscles that attach to the bones of the top part of the femur, the thigh bone, or it could be referred from the back, much like a heart attack would refer pain to the arm or the jaw. You can get radiation of a pinched nerve or even arthritic joints in the back that feel like they're in the hip. So you're exactly right. It can be a puzzle.
And this could be a show in and of itself. We're going to expand into the world of the veins. And Cindy Esbjornson, welcome to Maine Calling, first of all.
Thank you very much.
We think of vein problems. One of the most visible is varicose veins, or my mother used to joke, very close veins. but they're very common, aren't they?
Absolutely. About 1 in 3 people in the U.S. has a problem with veins, whether it's just spider veins, varicose veins, or even something as bad as a venous stasis ulcer. And I like to think of that all on a spectrum. It might start as spider veins and then eventually become varicose or very close. And eventually the end disease manifests itself in the skin with ulcers.
And what's going on here in my awkward layman's interpretation is, I mean, the blood comes down and it has to go back up the leg, and there has to be a mechanism to push the blood back up. That's what's not working?
That's exactly what's not working. It's the artery's job to bring the blood from the heart down to the feet, and then the veins need to get that blood against gravity out of the feet all the way back up to the heart so it can pick up new nutrients and oxygen. When a vein problem occurs, it occurs with the system of valves in the legs that are used like check valves in plumbing, where the blood should only move upwards and a little valve should shut behind it so it can't be pulled backwards by gravity. But once one of these little valves breaks, unfortunately, blood tends to leak or just run backwards, causing swelling and heaviness and aching in the legs.
And what causes that valve to fail? Is it something we inherit or something we did wrong or could have prevented?
Again, a billion-dollar question. We know there is a genetic link, yet it's not 100% genetic. There's definitely environmental risks. And back to the national question of, is this a problem of the United States? There is a lot of research supporting this is a problem of the industrialized world. So Northern European countries, the U.S., have much higher incidence than, say, Latin America or Africa.
I had heard, you know, I when I was a kid, people would say, oh, well, I got varicose veins from standing, which was a common thing.
Well, standing would be considered an environmental risk factor. So we see many people who work in professions requiring them to stand, hairdressers, wait staff, toll booth collectors, any profession where you're on your feet on hard floors, standing for prolonged periods, all put you at risk.
And yet, out here in our wellness effort, out here in my own office, half the staff is now standing up at their desk all day for various reasons. Is that now a bad idea?
Hopefully, if they're standing, they're tapping their toes, moving their feet, walking around, taking breaks to get drinks of water, staying well hydrated, and taking preventative efforts to keep their legs healthy.
Okay, and we'll talk more about that too, but
excellent.
I want to move down the line to the ankles and feet, which are related in the same way in terms of the best way to work, the best way to move. But Kenny Mazick, welcome to Maine Calling, first
Thank
of
you.
All. What's the most common issue with feet that people come to you and complain about?
Well, they come to me complaining of pain, but the reason for the pain, there are a number of them. You know, one that is very common is heel pain, plantar fasciitis. That's something that probably the most common painful ailment we see come into the office.
Is that shoe related?
That's a good question. I personally, in kind of the traditional podiatric belief, is that it's more related to activity, to poor biomechanics, and a lot to mistakes when training. Doing more than your body is capable of doing. You know, we get a little excited. We want to go out and get in shape when the sun comes out and the weather warms up, and we tend to overdo it and end up hurting ourselves. And it can be something very minor. With the foot, you know, a lot of times patients have no idea when the problem started, but because we're always on it, we're always using it, that little injury that started, you know, a month ago is finally starting to manifest itself, you know, later and just becoming more and more of a problem as they continue on their feet.
So when you attack this, what's your first line? Is it orthotics inserts that change the way that the foot sits or lands on the ground? Or are you looking at the way a person walks or all of the above?
Well, the with plantar fasciitis in particular, there's two things we look at. One is the biomechanics of the foot, and two is the inflammation that's there. Once that injury starts, there starts to become inflammation. We've got to get the inflammation out of there. So, you know, we'll talk about icing, oral anti-inflammatories, topical anti-inflammatories, and in severe cases, a cortisone injection to get the anti-inflammatory medication right on the problem. But if we don't also address the biomechanical problem, that plantar fasciitis is just going to come back. So we typically will recommend a supportive shoe and orthotics, as well as doing some stretching exercises.
Now, can a problem with someone brings to your office lead to a hip problem that Dr. Magori is going to have to deal with later?
Very frequently, yeah. As soon as you start having pain in your foot, you start compensating, your gait changes, and you know, it's a chain reaction. Some people will start complaining of knee pain, hip pain, back pain. You know, it just goes right up the chain.
So, Dr. Magori, when someone comes in, you must how do you sort through this puzzle and identify what's causing that?
Well, it can be complicated. Usually, if you have an alteration in gait because of mechanics or some other reason, the most common manifestation as you look at the hip area is in the soft tissues. So it's very important to get a good history from the patient and to not just focus like a laser beam on the anatomic area that the pain is currently most important or most important to, you know, greatest in. So you want to get a good history and then a physical exam. And part of the physical exam is, again, watching the patient in their shoe wear and without their shoe wear walking. And then part of the physical examination is looking at the joints in the entire lower extremity. And then you take it from there.
I read in preparation for this that – and some of the materials that suggested that some people don't know how to walk. And this struck me because I think it's walking is something that we think is a natural process that we all know how to do once we get up off the floor in our diapers and start walking around. But do we develop bad habits over lifetime that cause injury to our lower extremities?
Well, I think some people would say yes. I know we're going to later on in the show talk about the barefoot running discussion, and I think that's an area where people have examined that, you know, to a great interest of the American public. And so they've looked at evolutionary biology and how the foot hits the ground and how that might lead to acute and chronic injuries. So for sure that's the case. In a patient that I will see with arthritis, that's lived with arthritis, because the mantra for us is to treat things non-surgically with lower risk, lower cost treatments and try and control symptoms, and then ultimately do surgery when those things fail. That's really the thinking in the United States today.
And surgery is not what it used to be in terms of this invasive process cutting into tissue. They're actually much advanced and much less invasive forms of this surgery.
There are. Some of it is overhyped, but a lot of it is not, and a lot of it is true advances. But when a you know, with that model that we use to treat non-surgically first, we will often see patients that have learned to compensate or deal with the pain in their hip or knee with an abnormal gait. And there's been some Canadian studies that have shown, particularly in women, that muscle atrophy follows relatively quickly. So your original question, which was, you know, are we walking wrong and what is the what is the long-term issue associated with that, I think plays very well into this paradox or puzzle that we have with, you know, how long do you put off surgery? Because you certainly don't want to do a major surgery in someone at the beginning stages of a problem. But more and more thinking, I think, is that you don't want to put it off too long so that a patient has a decompensated gait that's very, very hard to recover from. So recovery after surgery and less invasive surgery plays into that nicely, because if you can allow for earlier recovery, that may speed up getting back to a normal gait. And that's where, you know, we have to focus our attention pretty strongly once the surgery's done and is successful.
And we'll talk more about maintaining good leg health. We'd like you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. The number again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll take a short break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is David Remnick. An award-winning journalist and best-selling author, Remnick has been editor of The New Yorker magazine since 1998. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
You can tune in for that City Arts and Lectures program tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. MPBN's Maine Capital Connection television channel is on the air and on many cable channels around the state, offering daily coverage of the legislature in Augusta. Perhaps you've seen it. Well, if you have, we're looking for your input about the channel. Our survey takes just a few minutes. Fill it out online. Go to mpbn.net for all the details. And thank you. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by the Down East Spiritual Life Conference, examining spirituality in our times, August 23rd and 24th on the waterfront in Bar Harbor. More at downeastspiritual.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, Taking Care of Your Legs. With me in our studio, Dr. Brian McGorry is with the Division of Joint Replacements at Maine Medical Partners Orthopedics. Dr. Cindy Asbjornsson is founder of the Vein Healthcare Center in South Portland. And Dr. Kenny Masick is a doctor of podiatric medicine. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow, it's hard. At Portland Foot and Ankle. We'd like you to join the conversation as well. Are your legs in shape? Do you have a question about this complex system we call our legs? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Got a lot of phone calls coming in, but we'll do an email first. Susan asks, pregnancy can wreak havoc on a woman's legs and feet with ligament pain, foot cramps, varicose, spider veins, etc. Are there measures that a pregnant woman can take to minimize these side effects and, more importantly, avoid long-term damage? We'll start with you, Cindy.
Absolutely. It's interesting. Most of the damage to veins, at least, in a woman's body during pregnancy happen in the first trimester. And curiously, this is a point in pregnancy that a patient really isn't monitored that closely. With the advent of the home pregnancy test, most OB docs don't even see a patient until they're nearing the end of the first trimester. So I try to see my patients who are at risk, who are planning pregnancy, prior to even conception, because the prevention can start day one of that pregnancy. And the best way to prevent any vein issues, at least, is to wear compression stockings. A graduated compression stocking, 20 to 30 millimeters of mercury, during your first trimester is well documented to decrease any vein problems that may arise during pregnancy. Historically, we thought all the problems started in the third trimester when you had this large physiologic barrier in your lower abdomen preventing vein from flowing up. But we now know that it's really more of a hormonal-based problem. The hormones of early pregnancy do the damage to the vein walls, causing them to stretch and, unfortunately, breaking those little vein valves. So prevention is very possible and very achievable with something as minimally invasive as just a compression stocking.
Now, obviously there are changes going on in the body that contribute to this, but one of them is also the added weight. And we have another question asking about the role of obesity in leg problems, and we'll start with feet.
Okay.
Dr. Masick.
Well, there's no question that, you know, with obesity, there's a lot more stresses that go through the foot. Even more importantly than that, I think with recovery, with treatment options, you've really got to consider all the risk factors associated with obesity. I personally, you know, I see so many thin people come in the office with foot problems that I'm not sure that, you know, the cause is obesity. You know, there's a lot of complications that go along with obesity as you're recovering from a foot problem that need to be addressed. So, you know, the staying off your foot, getting shoes that fit comfortably, having support from orthotics, those are all things that are more challenging with obesity. But I personally haven't seen that obesity causes the pain.
Is it more of an issue for joints?
I think that it is. There's actually two areas that have been pointed to cause early degeneration of joints in patients that are obese and morbidly obese. One is the more obvious, which is the mechanical. The heavier you are, the more forces on the joint. And people don't realize, but because of the muscle tension that allows us to stay upright as humans, you put between 5 and 7 times your body weight across the joint with each step. So but just by your leg balancing your body, that increases your weight to 5 to 7 times your body weight. So even losing 10 pounds over 1 million to 5 million steps a year can make a huge difference. The second area is chemicals that are released by fat called adipokines, which actually lead to inflammation. And by decreasing your weight, if you're obese, you can help both by decreasing these chemicals that cause inflammation and decrease the mechanical forces on the joints.
Is this released by visceral fat, internal fat, or all
fat? I think all fat, but I'm not certain of that.
Let's go to the phones now and let's go to Easton and Barbara. Hi, Barbara.
Yes?
Yes, go ahead, please.
My question was the problem of neuroma. I've had a problem with my right foot. I have had surgery to try to eliminate this problem on 3 different occasions. And it really did mess up my walking. And the way I feel, I'm going to probably have another. It feels like it's coming back.
All right,
First of all,
sorry, Barbara, we need to know what a neuroma is, and we're going to ask Dr. Masick.
Yeah, so a neuroma is an inflammation of one of the intermetatarsal nerves. So these are the small nerves that innervate the toes. They run along the bottom of the foot, and they run right underneath the ball of the foot. And so as people walk, a lot of people will irritate those nerves, and they begin to swell. They become enlarged. As that happens, they become more painful, and this is kind of a progressive problem. So typically, we start off by recommending wider shoes. The tighter the shoe is, the more pressure there is on that nerve. We recommend padding in the shoe that will help to offload the ball of the foot. A lot of times we'll do cortisone injections to calm the nerve down. If that doesn't work, there's a newer treatment where we inject alcohol to sclerose the nerve and actually almost dissolve the inflamed nerve. And as a last resort, we resort to surgery and excising that nerve. It innervates a small amount of the toe, so patients can typically do fine without the nerve. If you're in a situation where you've had multiple surgeries, there is a fairly high recurrence of neuromas where nerves get cut. A lot of times they'll develop what's called a stump neuroma, and that is one of the major risks of doing surgery, which is why we typically will exaggerate all the conservative treatments first.
All right, Barbara, did that help?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. 1-800-399-3566. Let's take a call. Let's go to Surrey and Elaine. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am a middle-aged distance runner who is currently training for a marathon and am noticing increasing discomfort in the bottom of my feet. And you were mentioning the barefoot running before. I have read conflicting articles that the way to go as you get older is more cushioning or, conversely, to go with barefoot running. And I wondered what your views were on this, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks, Elaine. I'm guessing there are differing opinions, certainly within the running world, about this. But medically also, are there different views, or are you all generally on the same page about barefoot running? Dr. McGorry.
Well, I think I'm going to guess that we're generally in the ballpark, meaning that most people think that whether barefoot running is a good thing or a bad thing is controversial, and more research shows that it's really how the foot lands, not necessarily what you're wearing. But then other people say what you're wearing affects how the foot lands. But I think generally the medical community, I think, would agree that if you are going to try it, that you shouldn't go from shoes all the time to barefoot running. And you really need to very slowly get into this type of dramatic change in your training if you're going to avoid injury.
And Dr. Masick, the argument I'm guessing is, hey, our bodies were designed, our feet were designed for this. It's the natural way. Therefore, it's probably okay.
Yeah, and you know, I think that is a compelling argument. We're working against millions of years of evolution, but you know, I agree that if we are going to try barefoot running, the key is to act like it's the first time you've ever ran, because your biomechanics are completely different. The traditional jogging gait that we all are learned is to strike our heel first and then roll onto the ball of our foot. The thought is that extra pressure on the heel is not a good shock absorber and leads to a lot of our problems. Barefoot running, it's important to know we're not just kicking our shoes off and running barefoot. You're changing your gait. You're not landing on the heel. You're landing on the ball of your foot, and you're kind of using the foot as a shock absorber, the leg, the knee. And really the key to get started is to just – you know, go a few yards, you know, run down the driveway barefoot.
I can do that.
Yeah. and see what your foot feels. You're going to automatically start running more gingerly because you've got no protection there. You're not going to be slamming your heel down against the pavement. You're going to stay on the ball of your foot.
And that's going to put a lot of stress on your calf if your calf isn't in shape, isn't it?
Exactly. That's why you've got to you're going to use different muscles. The bones are going to function differently, the tendons. That's why you've got to start out very slowly. And then build from there.
I'm going to take a call on veins, but I wanted to ask all of you about stretching and yoga and the role that plays in kind of solving some of these aches and pains and problems. Dr. McGorry, is stretching a one way to deal with some of these problems?
I think so. I think that the CDC recommendations that we talked about before, where you get aerobic exercise for a half an hour five times a week, complemented with strengthening twice a week, is excellent. And I think yoga is a perfect way to get that strengthening. I think that the stretching portion of it can be very helpful for many patients, but the strengthening portion in my own practice is the one that will minimize injuries. Oftentimes we see patients with a common malady called bursitis of the hip, and it's often related to weakness of the major muscles. And so I think that many of the common yoga forms address that strengthening.
Let's take a quick call from Richard in Augusta. Hi, Richard.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, I just had a question for someone, say I'm around 50 and appear to be developing varicose veins, not overweight, very good health. And I've talked to my doctor about it, who has said, well, there's really nothing you can do, just treat symptoms. I've seen other material talking about treatment for collapsing veins. Yeah. And I was wondering, what can a person do, if anything, to prevent varicose veins from getting worse?
Okay, Cindy, we're running out of time, so I'm going to ask Cindy.
Sure, Richard, there's many things you can do to prevent them from getting worse, to stop them, to control the symptoms, and even to treat them, even at a level where they are now. If they're bothering you and affecting your lifestyle day to day, a lot of the new treatments are minimally invasive, and the risk-benefit ratio actually kind of pushes us to treat a little earlier than historically when we would treat with strippings. But walking, whether you're wearing barefoot shoes or your regular shoes, is going to certainly help. Anything that gives you a rhythmic calf contraction. So if you're standing for long periods, bouncing on your toes, or even just getting your toes off the floor and contracting that calf, puts a nice squeeze on the deep system of veins in your lower leg, and that forces the blood uphill, gives it a nice push uphill, which in turn affects your superficial system where those veins are. So walking is probably one of the best things you can do. I mentioned earlier, compression stockings are truly a mainstay of therapy. And talking to your primary care doc about prescription for compression stockings would be a good idea. Or if your doctor, your primary care doc, doesn't think they're really worth treating, sometimes getting a second opinion is a good idea. A lot of primary care docs haven't stayed current in the field of phlebology, and only because this is an incredibly new field. It's really only come into existence in the last 20 to 30 years, and a lot of the modern treatments have only been around since really the late 90s. So it's a very, very new field. It's hard to stay current in everything out there. And talking to someone who might be a little more up to speed is probably a good idea.
All right, we're going to take another short break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the creator of the TV series Arrested Development, Mitch Hurwitz. 6 years after this cult hit was canceled by the Fox network, Hurwitz has brought us a new season of 15 episodes on Netflix. People have been binge-watching it all over.
And purge-watching it.
Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Life is better with MPBN, and MPBN is better with you. Our fifth annual Life is Better contest is now in full swing and will wrap up at the end of this month, June 30th. If you make a donation to MPBN before then, you'll be entered into our Life is Better contest, where the grand prize, thanks to Lee Automals, is a new 2013 Nissan Altima 2.5S. Second place prizes, there are six of them, are Kindle Paperwhite 3G. Evergreen members are automatically entered into the contest. Please note, no purchase or contribution is necessary to enter and will not increase your chances of winning. Void where prohibited. Full contest rules and directions are at mpbn.net. Just click on support. You can also call us during business hours at 800-884-1717, extension 1201. That's 800-884-1717, extension 1201. And thank you. Join us immediately following Maine Calling for It's Your World. The guest speaker today is Christiana Figueres, Executive Secretary for the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. That's It's Your World following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today, taking care of your hips, heels, feet, and all the things that keep you mobile. With me in our studio, Dr. Cindy Asbjornsen. She's founder of the Vein Healthcare Center in South Portland. Dr. Brian McGorry with Maine Medical Partners Orthopedics. And Dr. Kenny Mazik, doctor of podiatric medicine at Portland Foot and Ankle. I think it's podiatrist and podiats.
Yeah.
Foot guy. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Let's go to Portland and Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, please.
I'm 57, female. I've always been really active. I'm not heavy. I'm 140 pounds, 5'8". I've got arthritis in my knees. I also have multiple sclerosis. I've been having more and more trouble with my knees, with the arthritis and with Baker's cyst. I've had spasms in one calf, and I've had another knee that knots up, and I can't put weight on it afterwards for a couple of hours. I've had one orthopedic doctor suggest that it was the MS, and another one said it was the arthritis. I've had a couple of cortisone shots, which help temporarily for a very short period of time, but I'm still having calf spasms, and the other knee still knots up part of the time. And I wondered if there's anything that could be recommended for a course of action. I can't sit back in my heels anymore in yoga.
I'm not sure that we can give you, without coming in and doing a thorough exam and being the actual physician attending to this problem. Linda, we want to be careful about advising and giving medical advice, but anybody want to talk in general about that problem? We've sort of skipped over the knees a little bit, the issue of arthritis. But
I can briefly tackle that. I think the key in your case is going to be collaboration between your neurologist, your MS doctor, and the orthopedic surgeon, because I think that there's probably factors from both that are going into spasm and arthritis of the knees. The fact that you had temporary response from the intra-articular injection says that the pain that was relieved with the injection in the joint is probably from the joint. That just makes sense to me. And I think that that tells me that something can be done. So I would recommend maybe revisiting this with your orthopedist and asking to help collaborate, you know, to make sure that there's collaboration. I think your expectation going into treatment is that one solution may not solve both the spasm problems and the knee arthritis problems, and you may ultimately need care for two different problems.
All right. Best of luck to now Poland and Judy. Hi, Judy.
Oh, good afternoon. As a teenager visiting Europe for the first time in the late 40s, I noticed that I could pick Americans out of the crowd because they always had a very loose sort of hip walk. I also noticed now that our school children or our population in general walks every which way, not so like the Europeans, and they let their abdominal muscles hang loose. I guess you would call this posture. Has this got something to do with aggravation of hip and knee joint pain?
I did read that many of us, as I mentioned earlier, sort of walk. We don't lead with our knee, and we don't stand up straight, and we sort of don't do any of the things that our mother told us to do, and this leads to problems down the road. Is this part of the equation?
Well, there's a lot of things that go into our gait. You know, we see pediatric patients, and we got to evaluate the rotation of the hips, the alignment of the knee, even the tibia and fibula can be a little bit offline. So when you see someone walking, if they've got a really abducted kind of walking like a duck, or if they're in-toeing, there's a lot of areas throughout the chain there from the hip to the knee to the ankle that even the foot, the way the metatarsals have developed, that could be the problem. So when we look at someone's gait, there's a lot of things that can go into it. Most of them, though, can be corrected, and especially if we notice it early in kids, we can do some bracing and some things like that to loosen up the ligaments and get things straightened out a little bit.
And Judy, you're calling from Poland, Maine, so you're not talking about the... Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
No one's.
All right. Thanks. I guess no one has any comments about people walking differently in Europe. I'm wondering about having been treated for a sore joint once. The treatment I got was simply to rotate, you know, to hang the arm and rotate it. And I was told that one of the reasons for that was simply to get blood flow in the area of the joint. To have some sort of movement there, to have blood come in and provide whatever blood provides. And it actually did. It worked. Is that a treatment for some other joint issues as well?
I could probably speak on that. Just in the sense of seeing a lot of hip problems and feet problems and everything in between, if you don't have a good blood supply, that's going to be a rate-limiting fact in anything done for treatment. If you can't heal a small wound on a toe, nobody's going to want to do a surgery to fix something else in your toe. I know all three of us probably put our fingers on people's pulses in their feet regularly, and that's to ensure that the heart is pumping blood there because you need blood to heal. From a venous point of view, you need to be able to get the blood out of your foot as well. So it is very integral to all aspects of leg health, and a very important component.
At what point do we say, okay, this is out of the norm and we should go see someone, particularly, for example, with hip or knee pain? People age, they get aches and pains. What's the sort of the point where we should go and visit you?
Well, I don't know that there's a blood test or a, you know, a litmus test, if you will, to tell us that. I think it's different for individual patients and what their, you know, their norm is and what they're willing to put up with. But I think, you know, as a general rule, if you have a problem that seems to impact your life for more than a month, I think it's worth checking with your primary care physician and getting some advice as to whether or not an evaluation would be appropriate. I think that some patients are afraid to see healthcare professionals because they think once they've entered the system, something, some procedure, or some intervention or medication will be absolutely necessary. And I would say that the opposite is true. I think dealing with an injury or an abnormality or a problem or a concern early on actually helps get to the root of the problem early and deal with it early and hopefully minimize the intervention that's ultimately needed.
But if you wake up in the morning and you're stiff and it's painful and then it goes away, isn't that just sort of normal life or aging?
It certainly can be, depending on your age and whether or not that happens gradually. So I think that most patients' common sense will allow them to make that decision.
We've got about a minute left.
Just one quick comment on that, though. I think patients do have some level of what I consider ageism. They think, oh, I'm supposed to feel lousy because I'm old. And that really isn't the case. 9 times out of 10, if there's something that's bothering a patient, if they bring it to the attention of a medical provider, there's usually at least some form of education or some insight that might help set them free from whatever issue it is. So I encourage all of my patients to talk freely to myself and to their regular providers and to at least put it out there and see if a little knowledge can be power for them.
So it probably comes down to the same advice for general health in a lot of ways in terms of exercising, stretching, watching what you eat. All of the things that Mom told us are probably true of maintaining good leg health as
well.
And
don't forget to stand up straight.
Which I'm not doing right now, in fact. It's awful. Well, I appreciate all of this conversation. We could keep going all afternoon, but we're out of time. But thanks, all of you, for being here today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Dr. Brian McGorry is with Maine Medical Partners Orthopedics. Dr. Cindy Asbjornsen, founder of the Vein Healthcare Center in South Portland, and Dr. Kenny Masick, a doctor of podiatric medicine at Portland Foot and Ankle. Third time's the charm. Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcasts by visiting mpbn.net/mainecalling. Tomorrow on the program, join Jennifer Rooks for a conversation about archaeology in Maine. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.